Gamacho over Roosevelt Avenue. This is TabilePod.com coming to you from our studios high atop Prospero's Books and Cafe. Today is Thursday, the 12th of April, 2012. On this date in 1633, Galileo is convicted of heresy. In 1802, the people of Tbilisi are told that they were joining the Russian Empire in Sioni Cathedral. In 1852, Tbilisi Opera and Ballet Theater was opened. In 1861, Fort Sumner was fired upon, starting the American Civil War. In 1929, poet Mufran Machavadiani was born. 1945, Franklin Roosevelt died. In 1961, Yuri Gagarin becomes the first human being in space. The space shuttle, by the way, was launched exactly 20 years later. In 1980, Samuel Doe takes control of Liberia, by the way, after downsizing exercise by Firestone Tires due to competition from the Japanese manufacturer Bridgestone, which led to them dropping the salaries at the Firestone rubber plant in Liberia. Samuel Doe then took power, then a counter coup by Charles Taylor 10 years later led to civil war throughout a lot of West Africa. So next time somebody wants to, do a neutron jack job on some company, think about that. David Letterman is 65 years old today. Today it is me, Cameron Christensen, Matthias Uter. Nothing we say represents anybody or any other entity other than ourselves. So just remember that. Misha said that the groups that Adesanya called paramilitary formations are voluntary reserve groups. Democracy and Freedom Watch reports that 50,000 people have signed up for voluntary reserve service. In the last 9 months, Misha hopes that the number will reach 70,000 this summer. He said these are Georgians who want to protect their village, city, district, and house, and they were requesting training and weapons from us. This is not the whim of any political party or group. We should never appear in a condition when the enemy is tormenting one part of Georgia and all the restaurants of Tbilisi are full of people. He said on the anniversary of the 9th of April, which was when a lot of protesters were killed in 1989, for those who don't know, in front of Parliament. Liberale reports on how people are gathered for this voluntary service. The service is called Secure Your Home, and in villages, officers go around and call out enrollment because you never know when Russia or Azerbaijan attacks or what happens if the U.S. starts a war with Iran.
Yeah, and there was, I think, a lot of rumors and speculation and irritation in Georgia in the past few weeks because everybody was talking about this, paramilitary groups that were allegedly formed and nobody really knew what was going on, and people were making a connection to the elections, saying that, the government was allegedly hiring people for a worst case scenario, and
now we know it's just, self-defense in case of a Russian or Azeri invasion.
Well, so we know that Georgia got rid of conscription recently and has been moving towards a professional army. And
did they really get rid of it completely?
Yeah, so they've been moving towards a professional army and they've worked on paying their officers much more and I think improving the kind of training that they're giving. What's interesting, or the questions that I have, is if you're talking about these 50,000 recruits or people who have volunteered, I wonder if there's any sort of regional distribution that would be of note. And I also wonder, it sounds like, the way that Saakashvili was commenting on it, it sounds like it's a very informal process. So it's not something that's formalized by the state?
No, I think it is formalized by the state. And there's still, I think there's some form of conscription still because some of my colleagues are asked to go to exercises every now and then.
I don't think they've gotten rid of conscription. No. I think they've changed the rules a little bit. And I think a lot of people are trying to move towards a volunteer army, although I'm not really in favor of that. Although the conscription here, essentially you had to be poor and from a village to serve. The rest of the time you'd get out of it, but just have to go, once a year for a couple of weeks or something.
Yeah. Well, they've changed the whole way of doing the reserves, though. I think what you guys are talking about is the reserve training.
Right.
So you actually have to go and go through a reserve type of training. But they've gone, I think they've got, are they? Do they still have the university classes that everybody goes through?
I don't know. The whole thing seems to be relatively ill-considered. And you tell us, Matthias, being a European, since you know about these things, I mean, the Swiss are pretty serious about it. I mean, you have these guns, or everybody has guns, but they're kind of locked. You have like some official gun, and they're locked away in a thing, and you can't really ever touch them. And it's like if you do, an alarm goes off, and it's like, you know, somebody pushes a red button, and then all of a sudden the doors swing open on the arsenal that everyone's got in your house. But the rest of the time, they're never touched. And, you know, you can't appear in uniform and things like that. So, I mean, there's really pretty tight control on it, I think.
Right. But the question is, like, the security challenges that Georgia is facing, if you have, you know, volunteers in every village, and that's, I think, what Misha said, is that in every village they have volunteers who are ready to defend if the enemy approaches. But if you have tanks or helicopters, it's what we see in Syria right now, you know. If you have people with, even if they have guns, but if they have to fight against tanks or helicopters and all that, there's not that much that they can do, I think.
And if, you know, I mean, nothing against Georgia. I'd say the same thing about anywhere. But if you're, like, if you are looking at, and let's be real, we're talking about Russia. So if you're looking at a Russian invasion, you know, you're not going to be handing out pea shooters here. I mean, let's say you're handing out Kalashnikovs. They're cheap, you know, they do the job, small arms. You know, the Kalashnikovs have killed a heck of a lot more people than any other weapon of war in the you know, post-war period. So you hand out a bunch of Kalashnikovs. My guess is that statistically, it's a little bit more likely, looking at scenarios, that those are going to be used in ways other than defending the homeland from a Russian invasion to a greater degree than for any normal purpose. And so, I don't know. I mean, where's the legislative framework for this? Where's the national discussion about, you know, all of this?
And I think the declared goal that Misha, I think it was on Civil G today, is that next year there will be 150,000 volunteer reservists. And that is a very significant part of the male population of Georgia. Do you really want that many arms circulating around? That's the other side of the coin.
Well, this really makes me think of the United States, though, in the Revolutionary War and the Minutemen. I mean, this is what I'm kind of recalling when I hear this description.
Well, but on the other hand, you know, the Minutemen, you know, it took, like, what, 3 minutes to load, you know, one lead, you know. You had the powder, I mean, they're flintlocks and blunderbusses, and, you know, I mean, that was a whole different...
No, certainly, and it was a response, though, to not having a professional army.
Right.
Yeah.
But, well, I don't know. This is a compelling narrative about, you know, defense, and we're all in this together. But I don't know. I can see it playing out in a different way. Cajeti Information Center reported that after asking people's opinions on not giving citizenship to Ivanishvili, which they went around and did with cameras. Those who stated that the government's actions were unfair were pressured by authorities, were getting threatening calls and that sort of thing. For example, an elderly woman said that when she went to the canteen for socially vulnerable people to get a free meal, she was specifically asked to apologize to the local Gam Gebeli, or the kind of local mayor, for her political statements. Otherwise, she might not be be allowed to receive food in the future. She refused to do so.
Yeah. I mean, I was out this week in Kakheti talking to a lot of people. One thing that is interesting is that the Georgian Dream has set up a lot of local offices now. And it's not only the regional capital, like Tel Aviv, where I was, but in every larger village, there's a prominent renovated house on the main square that has a big blue logo of the Georgian Dream on it. And they have they seem to be somewhat organized already. They have a lot of people who were supporters of the Republicans that are now fairly active supporters of the coalition. They have this weekly newspaper of the Georgian Dream that people are reading. So they seem to be fairly well organized and actually more visible than the United National Movement at the moment. But then I talked to a lot of people who are opposition supporters, and a lot of them tell similar stories. It's that people have been fired from companies that are privately owned or under government ownership, and they've been fired for, you know, different reasons, but right, they all happen to be very outspoken activists of Ivanishvili's coalition. And another a narrative I heard from a bunch of other people, and that was fairly credible to me, is that people are not threatened, but people get friendly advice. They're friendly. They're asked, you know, by their friends who are, you know, in the local police, please don't show up at this opening of the new Ivanishvili office there.
Right.
And so it's not a direct threat to people's lives or, you know, to
sure.
anything serious, but it really has an impact on how people discuss politics, which is they're kind of reluctant and some are afraid to discuss politics in public. And this is really not a very healthy environment that I saw. I mean, maybe I didn't get the full picture, but I was especially talking to opposition
supporters. Where
were you?
In Sekhnachi, Gurjani?
No, I was, yeah, in Gurjani. I was in Tel Aviv. I was around Ahmeta. So in different parts of, I guess, northeastern Kakheti.
And well, I mean, it's, you know, one of the aspects of this is long-term election observers and it was really great that Misha came out loud and clear and said, we want, you know, a lot of observers here. We were then worried that, well, maybe they won't do the official request, but actually they did that immediately. They'd even sent the official request when he said that. You know, now it seems like ODIHR, which is a sort of designated entity that does international observing of the OSCE, although, you know, lots of other organizations do, are kind of like, well, you know, in due course we'll send out some mission. Someone's going to have to pony up some funds for this. So it would be really great to get some trained foreigners outside of Tbilisi, sort of, you know, that could follow up on some of this stuff sooner rather than later.
The soonest they will show up is 7 weeks before the election, I think. That's about, yeah, like the longest they could do if there was the money and the political will to do this.
Well, it would be great if somebody who controls a bunch of cash, like, for example, USAID or something like that, would, you know, send somebody around to, you know, take a look at some of this stuff.
I think coming back to this issue, though, about whether or not Georgians believe that Ivanishvili should be given his citizenship back, this question was actually included in the NDI poll, and there was a very large majority.
I think 70%.
It was like 71% believe that his citizenship should be reinstated. And, you know, it didn't jive at all with the number of people who said that they were Ivanishvili or Georgian Dream supporters. So I think it's pretty interesting to...
Right.
You know, think that people are looking at it more, you know, not necessarily within this political threat issue, but, you know, rather in a broader democratic framework.
Well, and it seems, you know, because it just seems unfair. It seems mean, you know, the fact that they take the whole 3 months to tell them, like, you know, well, here's the other way that you could apply, you know, and it just, you know, the way they're doing that. I mean, they're looking at it in this fairly narrow legalistic way when they really have been handing out a bunch of passports. I don't know. I've had arguments with pretty senior, you know, officials about this, and you know, they obviously have a different view. But as it looks to me, it just doesn't seem very, you know, very, very reasonable. And I think 70% of, you know, Georgia evidently agrees. On the other hand, it doesn't seem like they have that much support. I mean, only 10% of the population. Now, they, you know, freaked out about that and started screaming about NDI and Navarro, and I think the way they went about having those polls not be published, you know, they can certainly be criticized for, you know, there's arguments to be had either way. There was sort of a feeling that, you know, they didn't respond to the whole thing particularly well, and it went, you know, directly towards sort of anti-Americanism, and what they could have said was, look, there was a relatively high non-response rate, and, you know, with the fear and the villages and whatever else, it could have been, you know, you could say that that's a third of the population, and, you know, and this and that. But they didn't say that. In order to deal with the citizenship issue, Christian Democrat Gheorghe Targamadze came up with the idea to make a constitutional amendment according to which citizens the EU citizens who had been living in Georgia during the last 10 years and have been a citizen, have been born in the U.S. but are EU citizens can be elected.
Born in Georgia, sorry.
So which, you know, sounds like it's designed for Ivanishvili. Dr. Bakradze, head of parliament, said to Imedi that this is absolutely reasonable. But Ivanishvili said, after talking to U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Frank Wisner, who's some, you know, guy who's an ambassador, is an American guy, that's somehow advising him, I don't know.
And, yeah, Tabula, I think, had a story saying that he's now doing paid consultancy or lobbying, so it's not really clear what...
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. He seems to be in town, and it seems to be some guy who assumedly
showed up at
the
house.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, he's... You know, he's the question. There's a lot of discussion on Facebook as to who is this guy and is he important. I mean, he's a pretty senior State Department diplomat. You know, on the far side of 70. You know, not particularly influential, but probably quite well connected. Knows a lot how the State Department works. Who's talking to him? You know, I'd be surprised if some money has not changed hands. I mean, not under the table or anything. It's just, you know, I mean, it's lobbying, right? I mean, why not? Anyway, so then they're saying, well, you know, there shouldn't be this constitutional just for one person. I think a lot of people are so instinctively annoyed with this habit of like, let's just solve the problem by amending the Constitution that they just sort of, you know, sort of chuck that out. Whereas the government feels like, come on, we're making a good faith effort to, you know, allow him to run in the elections. And everyone's like, well, why don't you just let the guy have citizenship? You know, I mean, but okay, whatever.
Well, so now with the decision that he's not going to pursue this, not the naturalization process, but a dual citizenship, what's his plan? I mean, so he's not going to go for citizenship now, or they're disputing the other resolution? Or?
Well, I don't know. One would think that maybe he's got really good polls and that he just wants to sort of torment the government with this. The government's looking for some kind of solution, and maybe he just wants to make them look bad because he's on the winning side of this, you know, because they really do look sort of mean about it. So, you know, who knows? There was something in Democracy and Freedom Watch by Marina Chitashvili, saying, who, I don't know, worked with CRC, who had some real concerns about their method. I don't know, the whole thing was written in such a sort of weird, sarcastic way that it was sort of difficult to know for me to understand exactly what she was talking about. But anyway, there still seems to be a lot of heat on NDI, which I think, on the one hand, I'm not sure that the way NDI went about doing this was the best and that maybe they should, you know, reconsider. On the other hand, it really is it's just really awful the way Ivanishvili, his team is handling this whole thing. It says some sort of creepy stuff about them.
Well, since you just said that, I mean, maybe I'll just provide just slightly more detail. Marina Chitashvili is the head of the Center for Social Sciences. And as far as I understand, they've been given a fairly sizable contribution from Ivanishvili. And I don't know if, you know,
funny how that works, huh?
Yeah, I mean, and that was not included in the letter at the same time that she was asking for some more transparency regarding the way that the data was collected and also who is getting paid and how. And so, I mean, it was unfortunate to me that, you know, there was a lot of hypocrisy at the same time that she had, you know, maybe a couple good points in a very long and otherwise unwieldy letter.
But it actually, this is, I see that a little bit in the past weeks and months, that you have even more of a polarization in the media, in the NGO sector, than you had before. And it's even more difficult to get kind of the independent, fair narrative on a lot of stories. Like, you hear the stories that sound completely unrealistic and crazy. Some of that, you know, seems to be true, some of that doesn't seem to be true, but it's really hard, you know, when it comes to what's going on in the regions with, you know, threats, intimidation.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why people listen to tpeelpod.com right here for the unbiased, unvarnished truth, fair and even-handed. The Constitutional Court has partially agreed with the Ombudsman's appeal to declare unconstitutional a law that requires cable broadcasters to have a license. However, satellite TV will still require licenses granted by the public broadcaster,
and
the Broadcast Commission.
What is interesting is that, so Ivanishvili is expected to launch his ninth channel, his own TV station, in the next couple of weeks that is owned by his wife. And so in the past, you know, over the past half year, we've seen that different satellite providers show up. So there's Magdisat, that is a pay TV satellite company. Then there's Global TV, which uses kind of a terrestrial signal, but you need a satellite dish that you point towards a TV tower. And that is owned by, you know, an American, by, I think, a Lithuanian lady, and about 60% by Ivanishvili's brother. And then apparently there's a new satellite provider showing up in a couple of weeks from now that is called, I think, the Black Sea Group. which is apparently there's a bunch of people affiliated. It's not really clear who owns it. The Black Sea Group is also a big construction company that does road rehabilitation and things like that. And so there's a big fight over who has which channels in their packages. So Imedi and Rustavi 2 and some other channels refuse to be in the Magtisat package, and they refuse to be in the global TV package.
But now they are in that package.
And now they're in, because they say we are in this new package that shows up, this Black Sea Group package, and so why should we be in the other ones?
Uh-huh.
And so these channels, I mean, they have 60% market share, Imedi and Rustavi 2, so people watch them a lot. So if they're not in a package by a specific company, fewer people will pay for that. Fewer people will subscribe to that. So these two channels have a lot of market power. And so it happens that they don't want to be in packages that have also channels that are critical of the government and probably also the ninth channel. So it will be, I think, very difficult for people to have access to the ninth channel and also to the government-leaning channels in the same package, in the same satellite or cable package.
Oh dear. The Georgian National Communications Commission has warned Caucasus Online to stop airing 13 channels, among them Sky Sports 24, ICTV, Arte HD, THT, and Disney Channel, I guess based on copyright issues or something like that. Again, the GNCC has is stricter towards digital television. Magtisat, who was given a fine of 90,000 lari. Magtisat aired commercials for Premier League football match, which did not say the game would be transmitted in Russian. GMG holds the exclusive right for broadcasting Premier League matches in Georgian, and Magtisat airs the matches in Russian.
Yeah,
just so GMG sued them for misleading the viewers.
Yeah, just maybe to put this also a little bit in perspective, GMG is located in the same house as the Georgian National Communications Commission.
Their office
is in the same building.
Yeah.
And what is also interesting is that the 90,000 lari that Magtisat got fined, you could compare that to 5,000 lari that both Imedi and Rustavi 2 have been fined for many months of systematic violation of advertising regulation. So they just showed way more advertising than they were allowed to by law. And, after many complaints, they got fined 5,000 lari each for something that made them, millions of laris in extra profit. I mean, it's interesting to look at the relationship.
It sounds almost like the Broadcasting Commission is not impartial.
Well, an interesting side story is, the Georgian Parliament in Kutaisi is being built. We have been at my employer, Transparency International.
The hardest working NGO in Georgia.
Has been trying to get the contract of which company is, officially building it, what are the terms, conditions, how much is spent on that. And we haven't been able to get that. And I think other NGOs have failed to get this contract as well. Now, if you look at the construction site, they don't have this sign that is supposed to be there that gives you all the details, who is building it, how much does it cost, what's the permission and all that. But you see that the company that is building it is Magdi. It's Magi Style. And that company is co-owned by the owner of Rustavi 2 and general director of Rustavi 2, the largest TV station, and the head of the Georgian National Communications Commission. So that puts this, the Irakli Chikovani, the head of the Communications Commission, in this interesting situation that he can only be replaced for a conflict of interest by the Georgian Parliament. The Georgian Parliament is the only institution that could fire him if they found a conflict of interest. But with his private company, he's building the new building for the Georgian Parliament in Kutaisi.
Hey, it's a small country, man.
It is a small country.
TI Georgia, along with some partners, has issued its third report about property rights. Take a look at the website. It talks about tourist zones and that related to what's happened there and the amount of people who give their property to the state as a gift, which seems a little nutty. ITV reports that Sotne Bakuria, I don't know whether anybody remembers this guy. He has this hair, horrible comb-over issue. He was a former PR Yahoo for Aslan Abashidze, the former dictator of Ajada before it was granted revolutionary status in May of 2004. He's now been hanging around in Washington and is supposedly working with Ivanishvili's lobbyists in Washington. It also says that Tineko Khidasheli is involved in this, who's now sort of the international secretary or something for Ivanishvili. They're talking about a Russian oligarch named Sergei Veraminko, who's evidently involved in some of the expenses, who's allegedly Putin's buddy. Along with this, there are rumors floating around that Ivanishvili actually went to go see Georgi Mark Velashvili, the head of JIPA, at his dacha somewhere in Dusheti. And certainly Mark Velashvili has been on TV, more again, he was criticizing NDI. On Maestro, and was actually talking about how it's the Americans that listen to phone calls, not the Georgian Interior Ministry, which everybody thinks, and talks about how all the bank accounts are in the U.S. so that if elections go wrong, they will punish us. I don't know, a lot of interesting comments from Mark Velashvili.
Sotnay Bakuria, is he the one who writes those articles that you sometimes see?
Exactly. Yeah. He writes these articles that are in the Washington Times. Now, for our Georgian listeners, and we have a subordinate, it's important that people understand the Georgian Times, okay? I mean, sorry, the Washington Times. Okay, there's the Washington Post, which is a real newspaper. There's the New York Times. All right, the Washington,
which is a real newspaper. There's the New York Post, which is a Murdoch newspaper.
Right.
It's not a
real newspaper. And then the most unreal newspapers of them all are the Washington Times, which is just, I don't know, it was owned by the Moonies, some whacked out religion for a while. And it's just, I think it subsists on the fact that around in small countries around the world, the Washington Times sounds very impressive. They've got this great real estate, and so guys like Sotnay Bakuria will write something for them saying, Misha's a jerk or something like that. Whereas really, there can be no less trustworthy individual, imaginable than Sotnay Bakuria.
I think I just came across some of his stuff, actually. Wasn't he also related to Harvard? I thought he had some fellowship or something.
I don't think so. He's been made some good personal alliances while in Washington, whatever, stuff like that. My personal argument with him was when Aslan Ayan was around 2001, had himself elected Tavi, which domestically they translated as president of Ajada, which, with all the separatism and stuff, was quite a big issue back in the day down there. Had himself elected there, completely falsified elections. He was the person that was that would not allow me to go into the press conference to speak to journalists there. And when I left, I received phone calls saying it would be dangerous for your health to return to Ajada again. And so for 2 years I could not go to Ajada. Thanks to the assistance of Sotnay Bakuria.
It's interesting what became of other people who were working closely with Abashidze.
Yeah,
some of them are still around.
Like Yuri Targamadze, hero of the opposition. Exactly. According to Georgian Dream, police systematically stop cars of engineer who's carrying out renovation works on the offices of Georgian Dream. It's taken into the police and questioned for a little while.
Yeah, and one thing in Kakheti, for example, the Georgian Dream office there, One office says when they renovated it, they put some garbage next to the garbage container outside their office, and so the container was full, so they put some next to it, and they got fined immediately 200 lari for environmental issues. So,
oh boy. Yeah. Democracy Inferno Watch had a thing about a Russian businessman named Konstantin Rodionov, who showed up, and because he had gone to the territories, I guess Abkhazia or something, he was fined $1,200. It'd be interesting to know what the policy is on that, if you get what passport and how you need to come and go.
Well, it's actually the Georgian state does not allow you to enter through Abkhazia from the north.
Okay, so if you do that and you come to Georgia,
there are several years of prison on that offense.
You hear about that.
So it was very nice of them to let him pay $1,200.
Yeah, $1,200 is actually a good settlement. I think there are several $10,000 of punishment.
Oh, that's good. All right. The Gennady Onishenko, the guy who said that Georgian wine was not of acceptable standards for Georgia, has now said that accused Georgia of economic sabotage for bringing African swine fever pigs into Russia. Russia's southern area 3 years ago because he's completely bonkers.
I thought they were making progress. I mean, I thought Borjomi was going to enter the market.
Everyone's saying Borjomi's going to enter the market any moment. For all I know, it's probably already there. You know, who knows what's going on with this, with the Georgian exports to Russia, you know, regarding WTO. I mean, you know, we'll see. Former KGB head Leonid Tibilov won the de facto presidential elections in South Ossetia with 54%. Very modest 54%. I think it's kind of, they picked a good one this time. You know, it's over the, you know, beyond the threshold by, you know, a healthy 4%, but not outlandish and ridiculous. Right. I think that shows a degree of maturity on,
and the,
on their
and the
part.
Former Minister of Education, I guess it was de facto Minister of Education, that won the last de facto election
in the de facto territory.
She was, I think, banned from participating in this one, and so she said she would consider supporting him or not. She hasn't made up her mind, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Big mess in South Ossetia. And it seems like all of the dissidents are in North Ossetia, which is why they're not allowed to vote, but Ossetians in Russia can vote, just not in North Ossetia. The ombudsman is presenting today the annual human rights report to Parliament, which should be much reported on. Khatuna Gogoreshvili, the Cardinal Richelieu of the Georgian Parliament, said that the first parliamentary session will be held on the 26th of May. TI checked out the budget. It costs 73 million lari to build that building.
And paid by the city of Kutaisi, interestingly.
Really?
Yes.
Didn't know that. The whole thing.
Yes, but I mean, they get money from the central government, but it's the whole thing seems to be administered officially by the city of Kutaisi.
Well, now that Gudauri is officially part of Tbilisi, maybe they should just go ahead and make Kutaisi a part of Tbilisi, you know, municipality. Huh? Resonanci reports that the salaries of City Hall low-rank employees is increasing significantly in the pre-election period. U.S. Defense Department bought 28 mine-resistant cars for Georgian soldiers to use in the Afghanistan ISAF mission. The Interior Ministry has detained a police lieutenant colonel, David Rekhviashvili, deputy head of one of the departments in the Tbilisi police. Supposedly, he extorted 60,000 lari from a company in order for them to win a Interior Ministry bid.
They also tested the drone this past week, the Georgian-made drone for the first time, which they apparently were doing. They wanted to have local production so that they didn't have to worry about any sort of sabotage or selling of the codes, which is coming out recently about how
Iran...
Right.
And Misha said that they want to invest more in the defense industry in Georgia. So they had this two armored vehicles presented, this Delta unit.
It was the Lazica.
Yeah, the Lazica, exactly. Now the drones, and I think he also said that they want to have armored drones in the future. And so, yeah, Georgia wants to invest more in
growth,
defense.
Growth industry. You know, not like Americans can criticize anybody for defense contracting. The TS reports that Khobi Municipality in Samogrelo has announced a tender on purchasing a $35,000 U.S. dollar Jeep for the Sanaki Office of the Department of Constitutional Security, or CUDI.
That's actually a fairly common thing that in the local media, there's a lot of reports, you know, that the local budget is changed instead of building a playground or renovating a park, a new Land Rover is bought.
Yeah, which is just horrible. On the other hand, great that local media is reporting on that. I mean, that says says something. Beyond Tbilisi reports that Russian language public schools will not be accepting students starting in September in Ajada. Prime News reports that there will be a school for cyber security that will be opening in August. I mean, I think the big NATO one is actually in Tallinn, so maybe there's close coordination
they're
there.
They're bringing in Estonian experts, actually, for training people. And Georgia is one of the few countries that really has experienced, you know, cyber warfare. Was one of the first countries in 2008.
It was the first country in which a cyber attack predated a hot attack or whatever you'd call it. I mean, Kinetic, right. That's right, kinetic. Ooh, very defensive of you.
Thank you, MA.
Yeah, she has a master's degree, by the way. Stalin's museum in Gori is going to be reorganized as the Museum of Stalinism, which will tell visitors about how horrible Stalinism was, you know, which is a policy of the government, you know, to talk about how horrible Stalin was rather than to talk about the highlights of his personal life. Which is frankly fantastic because Stalin was a horrible, evil, brutal dictator.
Right.
And it's good that that's happening.
But the Stalin Museum in its form as of 3 years ago was also interesting because you could basically see how stories about Stalin was told in the Soviet Union and afterwards.
Yeah.
It was like a museum of telling Soviet history.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And I hope somebody, I hope there's been somebody who has recorded that, you know, because it'll be gone soon, you know, and it will, you know, but that will be an interesting thing to hear. So, you know, for our listeners, record your grandparents talking about when Stalin died and what they remember. I mean, it's amazing the number of people that he killed and his cruelty, but still the tears that were shed when that happened. A lot of Stockholm Syndrome action going down there. And a great book that everybody ought to read if they have not about the issue is called Bloodlands, comparing Hitler and Stalin and how they supported each other in their genocidal mania. A new 14-kilometer tram line will run between the buildings of Tbilisi State to Ortachala, from Sabartalo all the way to Ortachala, you know, passing through Vakhe and Rustaveli Avenue. A French company is working on that. There have been a lot of stories about this for a long time. That would be fantastic if it really happens. Mm-hmm. Trams are great things. I guess it's going to be where, in the middle of the street, or how does that work, you know? Certainly they would need...
Less traffic on Rustaveli in any case.
Certainly they'd need to change driving habits for that to happen, you know.
No more passing in the oncoming traffic.
Exactly. It'll be interesting development. According to Fitch rating manager James Watson, in an interview with the Georgia newspaper, The Financial, Georgia is overbanked. There are too many banks in Georgia. Financial also reports on Chinese plan to invest $1.7 billion in the next 5 years. You know, we'll see. Sounds plausible. Certainly the Chinese have a lot of money.
Hydropower, maybe?
Could be, yeah. Korea and China seem to be the ones that are most interested in that. Commerçant.ge reports that Siltnet has signed an agreement with one of the world's largest internet providers, Level 3. Soon the company will receive internet somehow directly from Frankfurt, which will allow connections directly to the European Internet. The article is not very clear what that means, but probably something to do with fiber optic.
But I don't think the, you know, German Internet is much better than the Turkish or Bulgarian one.
I don't know, international standards here. Who knows? I mean, it would be good for Georgia if there were significantly faster Internet around, although, you know, the Georgia speeds are not that much worse than others. There'll be a McDonald's on Tsedatelli Avenue in Tbilisi, open in late June, supposedly in Batumi as well. Nothing to compare to the 15 Wendy's that are going to show up, including in the telecoms building right across from us here on Rustaveli.
For anyone listening, I hope they have some sort of local flavor on their Wendy's menu, especially for the fasting periods.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Whoever that is. It's Vsoil. They're the ones doing it. So, yes, Mr. Khakadze, you know, we want fasting menus. We want... you know,
local flavor.
Local flavor. Homey burgers, you know, and little, I don't know, khachapuri.
Bajie sauce.
And,
and that's actually interesting because SOCAR, the Azeri oil company, in their gas stations, they're building McDonald's. So Whistle, the other gas company, you know, has Wendy's. So that's actually, I think, one of the few areas where there's competition between the gas station companies. Who has the better fast food?
I want to know who's opening up the Chipotle is what I want to know. I mean, because if they get Chipotle's, which is at least partially owned by McDonald's, you know, at SoCar, then that's where I'm going. Any of our listeners interested in burritos, please send us an email. Commerçant.ge reports that businesswoman Laura Gachava, Pedimze Shopping Center was seized. Property was sold via auction due to tax debts to the state. According to Commerçant.ge, the public zone of Gildani Lake Complex will open on the 15th of April. It'll have cafes, bungalows, and parks. By the way, out there, there's some big mall that's supposedly going to have a Gap that's built by the sort of Gulf investors, I guess, Rakim or something like that. That big colorful, yeah, in air quotes. We have air quotes happening here in our studios.
Not mine.
yeah, it's going to be some big mall, sadly, outside of town. You know, I wish that they would, fix up the place next to Freedom Square that's remained empty forever, is evidently owned by some Israeli investors. Sure would be nice if there was a mall in there. The National Bureau of Enforcement is selling a commercial space at 40 Rustavelli Avenue at auction. It's currently a closed store called DICA. The Georgian Partnership Fund, which we've discussed quite a bit, which is a big fund chaired by the Prime Minister, that's going to have matching funds for all sorts of different things and is a kind of engine for growth of this and that sector, I think agriculture, infrastructure, a couple other things. They are going to allot $10 million for hotel construction in Akhaltsikhe, Kvareli, and Sinandali. They also, their plans to partly finance construction of the Nenskra hydropower plant, which will be carried out jointly with a Chinese company. Work is expected to start in late April, which is pretty soon. Project is estimated at over $600 million. Export-Import Bank of China will finance 85% of that with a loan.
Right.
SOCAR plans to invest $800 million in construction of a carbamide plant in the Poti Free Economic Zone.
Those are pretty big numbers flying around.
There's always, we're going to build this. Also, I personally am going to invest $3 billion in an apparel factory in Khoni over the next 10 years. So I want everyone to just plan on that. There's going to be a free economic zone right between Khoni and Martvili. So start buying up some property there. Boy, we want Wendy's. We want Chipotle's,
Is that USD?
Yeah, USD, absolutely. Not Zimbabwe dollars. I don't know. I don't really know what carbamide is, but, that must be important if a factory of it costs $800 million. But, somebody look that up, would you, and tell us what's going on there. Iran will sell gas to Georgia and Armenia, according to Iran's oil minister, Rostam Kassemi.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How? And what about the sanctions?
Yeah, I don't know. I would say, my guess is that who knows about the Armenians? The Georgian government is really careful about its relations with Iran vis-a-vis the United States. I would also guess at this juncture, I'm just guessing, I really don't know anything, but probably Mr. Kassemi right now is kind of a little beat up and is grasping at straws right now, considering what's going on in Iran. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I kind of doubt it. There have been, because of snow melt and rain, there's a lot of discussion of the possibility of floods due to the warm weather at the end of April. They're talking about the Rioni, the Nguri, Supsa rivers flooding. So keep that in mind. So Kolga is back, a separation, which is in Persian, Iranian movie that won the Oscar for Best Foreign Movie and is totally awesome, that I would encourage everybody to go see, is showing tomorrow, Friday night, Friday the 13th. It's fantastic. 8 o'clock, Melancholia on Wednesday, also supposed to be good. And 50-50 on Friday the 20th of April. They all start at 8 p.m. at Dom Kino across from McDonald's and Rustavelli Metro. Question last week was, how much does it cost to get a rush job on your Georgian citizenship? All right. The very active listener, Mamuka Melkadze, how you doing, Mamuka, gave us an answer, but not the right one. He said 200 lari. In fact, that is not the fast process. That's the regular process.
Maybe there are three processes. Maybe there's the snail process, the standard,
there's the Ivanishvili process.
The three-month process for Ivanishvili, the never run. So the correct answer is 400 Georgian lari for the rush service. So cutting that in half, Mamuka, you get a 20-year subscription to not to say that you're going anywhere in 40 years, just, to tfilpod.com. And our new question, what do Abraham Lincoln and Mukhran Machavadiani have in common? Abraham Lincoln and Mukhran Machavadiani. That's it for this week, Mego Brevo da Mezzo Blevo. My Twitter address is @TXTBUK. That's Tango, X-Ray, Tango, Bravo, Uniform, Kilo. Email is tpeelpod@gmail.com, but we don't want you to send us an email unless it's something super secret that you're freaked out about saying, even under an assumed name, like, for example, Mevludi Khajapuridze. What you should do is post on our new forum, where we've had some very interesting comments in, and you can make recommendations on things we should cover, or announcements, or commentary on stupid stuff that we said. We had an excellent shout-out to our co-host, Arnold Schwarzenegger, this week, which we're very excited about.
So there are two Austrians in the Spielpot community now.
Exactly. Can you believe it? We need story ideas and other stuff that you think we ought to be covering. Weather's turning great. We're all about the get up out of your seat music. This is Johnny Rivers with a song released immediately before my birth. Coincidence?
Talking about the seventh son in the whole round world, there is only one, and I'm the one. I'm the one. I'm the one. I'm the one. The one to call the seventh son. I can tell your future, it will come to pass. I can do things to you, make your heart feel glad. Look in the sky, predict the rain. Got another man. I'm the one. Oh, I'm the one. I'm the one. I'm the one. The one to call the seventh son. I can talk these words that will sound so sweet. They will even make your little heart skip a beat. Heal a sick, raise the dead, make the little girls talk out of their heads. I'm the one. I'm the one, I'm the one, I'm the one to call the seventh son. Sounds so sweet, they would even make your little heart skip a beat. Heal a sick, raise a dead, and make the little girls talk out of their heads. I'm the one. Oh, I'm the one. I'm the one, I'm the one. I'm the one to call the seventh son. Son. I'm the one, I'm the one, the one to call the seventh son.